Well, I want to reach anyone that everyone's here, or especially who are the ones who are attending this webinar today. Thank you, especially to the panelists, all panelists, but especially my panelists at panel four. We will speak about the de facto union or the cohabitation. A word of thanks to the entire IFL and the JUDEFOS board and staff, which I do now at the name of Kurt Nahan. I hope you'll be able to meet you all soon. We will, but for the time being, we can only see each other remotely. We are just on time. Thank you for the panelists being here. I would like to start and to give the word to Mauricio Calderon. Mauricio, I'll just give a brief presentation. He's a lawyer and a notary public. He holds a master in family law with a postgraduate degree in family procedural law and orality techniques applicable to the service trained as a virtual tutor for teaching and learning. He is graduating in legal science, and he's currently in the free exercise of the profession with his own office, providing legal service in private and social law, specialist in family law. At his academic experience, we can mention he had experience as coordinator of the Master in Family Law and at the Evangelical University of El Salvador, professor of the subject procedural experts in family law, trainer of the family law course and the notarial function, organizer and trainer of coaching in procedural law of family. He's a fellow at AJUDEFO. He's a friend, Mauricio. Many thanks to be with us again. And please, the screen is yours, and you have around 10 to 12 minutes to speak. Please go ahead.
Great. Good morning and good afternoon. Hello, everybody. Greetings from El Salvador. Thanks to IFL and AJUDEFO for inviting me. It's an honor for me to talk a little about de facto unions in my country. Since 1859, in the Civil Code of El Salvador, is still in force. Non-marital union was not defined by the law, but it could be inferred from the Article 283 of the Civil Code, referring to concubinage as one of the reasons for forced recognition of the natural child. So that through jurisprudence, it was determined that concubinage should be understood as those sexual relations between persons who were not free to marry. In addition, it was required that the woman to declare paternity had to be proven that she was honest. Until the year 1994, when the Family Code came into force, it regulated that marriage and non-marital unions will be the means to constitute a family, and the final non-marital union as that constituted by a man and a woman who, without legal impediments to marry each other, live together freely and in a singular, continuous, stable, and notorious manner for a period of one or more years. The law confers on declared cohabitants the same rights as the spouses. The minimum period in El Salvador for recognition of a non-marital union is one or more years, but it must be requested within the 3 years from the date of the breakup or the death of one of the cohabitants. According to the law, the legal requirements to establish an unstable union or non-marital unions are heterosexuality, nuptial capacity, it means over 18 years of age, married and beyond married, living together freely for one or more years. It has to be continuous and stable, singular and notorious. In addition of that, if the couple being pubescent, they meet the requirements and have a child in common. The obligations and duties toward the cohabitants and the children are the same as for spouses: loyalty, respect, assistance in material duty, custody, support, and education of children, and cohabitation. Legally, it's not possible to adopt the surname of the cohabitant, but notarially, it's possible to establish the identity of a woman, specifying that she can also be known with the surname of the cohabitant and use both the names indistinctly. In order to exercise the rights recognized in the family code, it's necessary to enter into a stable union agreement. A request for a declaration of cohabitation must be filed jointly in court, where a judge will authorize it if it meets the legal requirements explained above. In that case, the property regimen adopted by the non-material union, it will be the profit sharing, and each partner retain the ownership of the assets that she or he had before the beginning of the union, but it can be modified at any time prior to the dissolution of the existing regimen. It should be mentioned that the old civil code had an arrangement-like figure called the esposales. I don't know how to say it in English and couldn't find it in the dictionary, but the esposales, which was the promise of marriage mutually accepted, subject to the honor and conscience of the persons, but without an obligation according to the law. Also, in El Salvador, it's not possible right now to have a stable union between people of the same sex, because one of the requirements established by law is heterosexuality. Even same-sex unions are not considered a family by the Constitution of the Republic. Non-marital union legally established enjoy the protection of the state. Constitutionally, El Salvador defines the family as the fundamental basis of society and establishes that it shall have the protection of the state and that the legal foundation of the family is marriage, which must be encouraged by the state, but the lack of marriage shall not affect the enjoyment of the rights established in favor of the family. In addition, family relations resulting from the stable union of a man and a woman are regulated. This brings us to the family code, which defines the family as the permanent social group constituted by marriage, non-marital union, or kinship, being the obligation of the state, its protection, integration, welfare, social, cultural, and economic development. A curious situation that occurs in El Salvador is that after many years of being in a stable union, many couples get married and divorce quickly. The fact of having a signed commitment in a document make couples consider the spontaneity of the facto union finalized. It's a little psychological and cultural thing. In that sense, a stable union can be converted into a marriage because one of the requirements to declare the facto union is not to have an impediment to contract marriage. The requirement for both, therefore, will be the age of majority, 18 years old, not being united by marriage, being in full use of reason. And finally, to dissolve the stable union declared by a judge, judicial intervention is necessary. In the same manner indicated for divorce, it means mutual consent by separation of more than 1 year or by being intolerable to the life in common, with the same rights established for the spouses in case of divorce. In example, divisions of assets, recognition of children, personal care, visit, child support, and the use of women, etc. And with that, I'm finished my intervention. Thank you, and I hope to see you soon. Cassio?
Okay, thank you very much, Mauricio, for delivering your lecture. I think we'll have some different folks from the other jurisdiction, especially Brazil, especially considering the same-sex relationship on a stable union, and we'll see it later. Thank you very much. Going to the next speaker, I would like to present you all to Dilia Leticia Jorge Vera. Dilia holds a master in law and international relations at University Autónoma de Santo Domingo. She's a bachelor in law at the Pontifical University, Catholic University, Madre and Maestra. She has taken courses in graduate of family law and intrafamilial violence. She has both private work and public work experience. On the private work field, she has worked as a paralegal an abogada asociada in abogados workshops. She has been a consultant to international organizations such as UNICEF, UN, Women in UN. She worked for the International Plan of the Dominican Republic, and in 2010, she founded her own firm, Dilia Leticia Rodemir Meira Law, DLJM Law Firm, dedicated to family law. On the public work field experience, she acted as consulting minister, ministra consejera, at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs from 2001 to 2005. In 2003, she performed as interim judge of the Court of Children, Niños and Adolescentes of the National District. Between 2016 and 2020, she worked as coordinator of the United Nations program for the Alcaldía del Distrito Nacional, implementing the Santo Domingo City Project and safe public spaces for women and children at the colonial zone. And since 2020, she has performed as Vice Minister of Innovation, Transparency, and Citizenship Attention of the Administrative Ministry of the Republican, the Dominican Republic Presidency. As academic experience, since 2006, she has been teaching the materials of the person and family regimes at the Pontifical University, Catholic University, Madre and Maestra. She has also been teacher at the Judiciary School, the Electoral Education and Civil Status School, the Judicial Court, and the Justicial, the Justicia Institutional Foundation, FINJUS, and other academic institutions. She's a member of the Family Law Lawyers Association of the Dominican Republic, the ADADEF, Colegio de Abogados de la República Dominicana, a fellow at IFL, and a founding fellow at IJUDEFA. Also, she's a member of the American Bar Association and the LGBT Bar Association. With no further delays, I would like to give you the word, Dilia, and thank you for being with us, Mrs. Vice Minister, a dear friend. Please, the word is yours. The floor is yours. The screen is yours.
Thank you so much, Tasio, for the introduction. I'm so happy to be here and sharing this panel with my friends from El Salvador, Brazil, and Mexico. And of course, thank you for these two organizations that I'm honored to be part of, the IFA, International Academy of Family Lawyers, and IJUDEFA. This is great, very happy. So I'm going to talk about a little about the de facto unions in the Dominican Republic. Let me put my watch here. Okay, in 2010, the Constitution of the Dominican Republic established that the union between a man and a woman that form a de facto home generates rights and duties in their personal and patrimonial relationships in accordance with the law. We still don't have a law yet, but since 1992, several laws have recognized the existence of the de facto unions of couples with or without children that live together under the same roof without being married. It wasn't until October 2001 that the Supreme Court of Justice, for the first time, recognizes the existence of these unions in the framework of a civil liabilities lawsuit where the concubine claimed that the company was guilty of the death of her partner in a traffic accident, so her emotional and economic damages be repaired. The concubine won the case, and this was the first ruling that the Supreme Court established the criteria that should be taken into consideration to see if a couple is living under a de facto relationship. And the criteria are the following. There should be a modo uxorio coexistence, which translates into a public and notorious relationship, excluding those based in hidden and secret relationships. Also, there's a legal absence of formality in the union. It also should be a relationship stable and lasting, having a lasting family life with deep ties of affection. there are no equal ties of affection, or there shouldn't be equal ties of affection or formal marriages ties with other third parties. This means that the cohabitants shouldn't be married to any other third person. So since 2001, the courts have started to discuss whether the assets that have been produced within that relationship must be assimilated to a marriage, or on the contrary, to a de facto partnership. It is important to note in this part that the mandatory regime in a marriage, when couples don't choose differently, is the common property regime. So the Supreme Court has been establishing the criteria on what type of economic regime forms in a de facto relationship. And in 2001, the criteria was that what it formed between them was a de facto society, which can be established by any means of proof. Then in 2011, the Supreme Court changed its criteria, and it established that the couple can contribute to the maintenance of the home through the jobs that they have, but also that working on the housework is also a value, economical value, as our constitution has established also. So taking this into consideration, the Supreme Court changed its criteria, and it says that what happens in a de facto union is what happens in a common marriage, is a common property regime. So they say now from 2011 that what forms in a de facto union is a common property regime. There is no need to prove material or intellectual contributions, just need to prove that there was a de facto union. And also that de facto unions assimilates to a marriage. But last year, the Supreme Court changed completely its criteria. It says that it's not possible to equate de facto union to a marriage. It says that that interpretation puts an end to the freedom of the people to design their lifestyle as a concretion of the fundamental right to the free development of the personality, which is established in our constitution. So judges cannot jump into an automatic conclusion. They should review every case separately. Finally, I would like to point out other important facts to have in mind regarding de facto unions in the Dominican Republic. There is no formality in these unions. It doesn't need to be registered anywhere. The recognition would be made by the courts when one of the concubines break up and submit their case when there is a disagreement regarding property issues. It is not possible to adopt the surname of the concubine or cohabitant just because they are living together. For this to happen, one of the cohabitants should authorize the use of the last name to the other one before a notary through a legal process. There is no right to inheritance in these unions. Courts have established that de facto unions should be between a man and a woman. And also important to say that there's no minimum time to recognize the existence of a de facto union. It's up to the judges to consider what would be a minimum time or what would be a stable relationship. It is advisable for concubines to enter an agreement before a notary so they can settle down how they're going to manage their own patrimony as well as duties and obligations during their union to avoid risk of interpretations before the courts. Children born out of de facto unions have the same rights as children born out of the marriage. Although the constitutions and jurisprudence have referred to de facto unions as between a man and a woman, there's no prohibition for same-sex de facto unions either to get to an agreement regarding their union or even go to court for a judge to decide on the property issues if that's the case. Since courts assimilate de facto unions to marriages, and child marriage was eliminated in January of this year, it means that courts shouldn't be able to recognize de facto unions between children under the age of 18 or between a child and an adult. It is obvious that we need to regulate de facto unions through law to guarantee constitutional rights. Also, I tend to agree with the last Supreme Court decision establishing that de facto unions should not be equal as marriage automatically. Each case should be reviewed separately. We're still a long road ahead in the Dominican Republic. I think it's maybe shorter. I think we're getting to that. Times are changing, society is changing, families are changing and moving internationally. And I know that either by law or by court orders, changes will arrive. It's just a matter of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you very much for being so strict at the time. And I agree with you, despite no legislation, no legal framework specially designed in the Dominican Republic, on soon, surely you will have it. Now, just before passing along the word to Rodrigo da Cunha Pereira, I'd like to remind, I mentioned before, that all the panelists, all the four panelists of this panel have forwarded to me their papers and their presentations. If one is interested, please just give an email to IFL or AJUDEFA, and we'll be glad to share it with you. It's also with the administration of both entities. Now, I'll pass the word to Rodrigo da Cunha Pereira, and I'll give his briefly present him. He's a lawyer since 1983, specialized in family and succession law, with an interdisciplinary emphasis on psychoanalysis. He's professor of civil law, family law, at the Pontifical University, Catholic University of Minas Gerais since 1993. He is currently licensed from the university. His academic education, he holds a PhD in civil law from the Federal University of Paraná. He also holds a master in civil law from the Federal University of Minas Gerais, and he's graduated from the Federal University of the same Federal University of Minas Gerais. For his scientific and political performance, he's presently the national president of the IBDEFA, which is a Brazilian Institute of Family Law, which is perhaps I understand as the hugest family law institution in the world nowadays with 18,000 members. I meant 18,000 members, it's true. He's member of the Brazilian Bar Association, and he's member of the ISFL, International Society of Family Lawyers. He has published books, articles, and given interviews, lectures, participated in newsstands, competitions, councils, and postgraduate. In fact, I am there to say that Rodrigo, considering family law, is a pop star in Brazil, and he has lectured given quite a lot of classes, and of course he has made and has turned family law a very different thing in Brazil, and is very well respected by the Supreme Court of Brazil, where he represents the IBDEFA many times as amicus curiae. And please, with no further delays, Rodrigo, you have the screen. The word is yours. Don't forget to unmute yourself, please.
Boa tarde a todos. Eu vou falar em português. Peço desculpas, sei que somos minoria, mas eu fico mais à vontade assim, talvez eu consiga traduzir melhor a mensagem que eu venho trazer aqui, mas o texto está em inglês também, que o Cássio me ajudou a traduzir. Muito obrigado, eu cumprimento a todas as pessoas e agradeço em nome do Cássio, que me fez o convite, dos meus colegas de painel, e muito honrado, fico muito honrado de estar aqui com pessoas do mundo todo. Bem, no Brasil, nós chamamos aquilo que se chamava concubinato, passou a chamar união estável, desde 1988. A Constituição da República do Brasil é de 1988, e aí, então, a partir daí, passou a chamar concubinato de união estável. E essa Constituição de 1988, ela fez uma grande revolução no direito de família, a partir de três eixos básicos. Homens e mulheres são iguais perante a lei, não existem filhos ilegítimos e não existem famílias ilegítimas. Então, a união estável tornou-se uma família legítima como o casamento, assim como outras famílias, como todas as famílias são legítimas.
All families are legitimate now. This was proposed in Article 226 of our Constitution, and then the Civil Code of Brazil was brought about in 2006, enacted in 2003. It proposed that there was a chapter dedicated to steady union, which is the relationship between two people with a certain level of financial independence, sharing a roof or not, but most of all, that has a certain level of financial independence. They might have or not children and might share the same roof or not. And I say that because the concept of steady union in Brazil has brought dubiousness to Brazil because there is a very thin line between a dating relationship and a steady union. People start to, they enter into a relationship. Women think they are dating and they say that they are in steady union, and the men end up thinking that they are simply dating. And there is a very, there's an abyss between the feminine psyche and the masculine psyche. And the same abyss is made patent in this story of one side thinking they're in a stable, in a steady union, and the other not. So the second element is that this is very similar to a marriage. It's almost the same. A steady union is a forced marriage per se. There's almost no difference between a steady union and a marriage. But in Brazil, we've had a greater number of steady union relationships in which there is a contract, but when they do not run this contract, there is this automatic regime, which used to be in the past in Brazil. This would be the partial communication of goods. Everything that is generated as assets is to be shared. So there's a regime of assignment. So this is a partial communication of assets. So it's possible to change one's name, but the common property regimen is one that is enacted. Well, there is a controversy we have in Brazil in which if a party is an heir or an heiress, we see a paradox because the steady union exists in a paradox. The more one regulates the steady union from steady union, we would like to say that this furthers itself from the initial idea of creating and bringing about a steady family. Well, state and family, you are in a steady union. The Federation says you have the same duties and rights as those who celebrate a wedding, a marriage. So it could be paradoxical because the laws we have to govern, which is in the Civil Code of 2003, we see that it proposes these laws to safeguard the more fragile party, especially financially speaking, historically, the women. So this is a paradox we've been coexisting with. This bringing towards the reality of a marriage forcefully, and there's no window or time frame to determine what is a steady union based on that, which is since 88, it was understood, and that there was a law in 84. There was a time frame of 5 years, which is not existent anymore. 1 year could be attributed as a steady union. It could not be a steady union. It could be a simple dating relationship. There's no time frame. There's no expiry date for a dating relationship. So there's a very fine line between these. And paradoxically, there has been contracts or agreements of a dating relationship. Well, a dating relationship contract is almost an anti-dating relationship by definition. Those clients who seek for our assistance, they say, well, how can I date peacefully? I don't want to celebrate a new family. I just want to date. Maybe give an apartment as a gift. I want to give gifts. And I said that this will be determined or be classified as a steady union. I was the very first to celebrate an agreement of a dating relationship. And now it's relatively common. But we currently have this paradox. But this is how we live in Brazil.
All families are legitimized. We absolve the stable union as a legitimate union. And in 2011, the Supreme Court in Brazil said that they interpreted affections unions are also legitimate, in the same as the hetero relationship. So we created this name, homo affective, to remove the prejudice that these words carry, homosexualism. So we say homo affective, it's lighter. So the Supreme Court accepted and recognized it. And 2 years afterwards, the National Council of Justice, which is an organ of the judiciary power, regulated the civil marriage, which can be transformed the stable relationship into marriage. So Brazil is probably one of the only countries in the world that has the gay marriage, which is not stabilized by the law, because the laws in family law, there is no law in Brazil to regulate the marriage between persons of the same sex. But here we can have the marriage between sex because the stable relationship, the homosexual relationship was legitimized and you can transform into marriage. So in synthesis, there is no deadline to state that now the relationship starts now. You can start from 1 year, from the moment that the family characterization was created. If there is a family nucleus, if there is conjugality, if there is parental relationship, it doesn't interest that much. It's just a complement. It's the conjugal family. There is a conjugality. See, there is a family and then all the rights are respected. So to summarize as much as I can now, because this is the view, panoramic view of the history, and what is a stable relationship in Brazil today. So thank you all for listening to me. Thank you very much, President Rodrigo. It's a pleasure to listen to you. Thank you so much. In a concise way, managed to bring this international panorama, these concepts of Brazil. I usually say the stable relationship in Brazil is the same as jabuticaba.
Se chama jabuticaba. Essa fruta não é produzida em nenhum outro lugar do
mundo. This fruit you cannot find anywhere else in the world, only in Brazil. So it is a Brazilian thing. It was born here. So I agree with Rodrigo.
To English, I'm sorry. We have this jabuticaba, a so-called fruit. But I agree with Rodrigo because the stable union in Brazil just happened to be protected because the woman in the past, several years ago, the women were not protected. And so laws were created initially to protect the woman for patrimonially, for having a home, and for many other aspects. However, this has changed in such a scale that nowadays you have to do contracts between two people who are dating because they don't want to be considered as a de facto union, cohabitants. So this is a little bit crazy, but this is our jabuticaba, and when you come to Brazil, I'll introduce you to the fruit, and also you come to know Ibedefan and so on. Well, thank you very much. And now I will introduce you to our last panelist, who is Gustavo Salas Rodriguez. Gustavo holds a PhD with cum laude recognition from University of Valencia, Spain, where he also holds a master's degree of science in language and human relations. He's a professor of human rights at the Ibero-American University in Mexico City campus, from where he graduated as a lawyer. Since 1996, he has been a partner in the law firm Salas and Salas Asociados in Cancun. This is very good to be in Cancun. He is co-director of Human Rights and Protection of Lawyers at UIA, IRO. He has been a guest lecturer by the American Bar Association at the University of Oxford. He has been an international observer of the Special Justice for Peace processes in Colombia. So, Gustavo, please, the screen is yours. Go ahead. You have 10 to 12 minutes presentation time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Cassio. Let me share my screen.
Yes, he would like to share his material. Yeah.
Thank you. Good afternoon, dear colleagues. I'll be as brief as possible. The history of civilization is the history of freedom, as Hale says. Humankind has always struggled to liberate itself from the abuses of power and society, therefore demanding protection by the state. Any person has the right to conform her family as she pleases, as long as such family conformation is legal. But legal is not necessarily righteous, since society and the law are often nurtured by the morals of their time, like forbidding the marriage between homosexuals or allowing children marriages, for example. Then the aforementioned struggle for freedom has led society to acknowledge different ways of family conformation, other than the traditional ways established by the law. Of course, concubinage has been acknowledged since the Roman Rite, but as a more uxorio union, that is a stable and permanent union as husband and wife. This link was acknowledged for both women and men, and of course, nowadays is insufficient. So we have to use another right institution to understand the de facto union, that is the affectio maritalis. The affectio maritalis implies a couple that has the will to live as a married one with the implied personal and patrimonial rights and obligations, but without getting married. Is the de facto union of cohabitation a human right? Let's get back to the time of ancient Rome under gods. Janus was the god of the two faces, the god of passages that can be used for getting in or getting out. That could be used as the representation of the two dimensions of the human rights, the active and the passive dimension. Janus Patulcius was used to invoke the god who faces the passage intended for getting in. This would be the active dimension of the human rights. There is the fundamental right for committing marriage and consequently conform a family. The doorway that shall be crossed is guarded in this active way, in the active way, by the god Janus Patulcius. As a complement of this god of the two faces, we have the passive dimension of the right to get married, guarded by Janus Clusius. This face of Janus points out this other way to the right to not get married, as Professor Pedro Talavera says. Another reference talking about gods would be Abraxas. Not that one. This one. The god of Damien in the novel by Hermann Hesse. Damien explains that Emil Sinclair, to Emil Sinclair, that Abraxas is a god that contains all the light and all the shadows, all good and evil, a dual deity, a double god, who also like the human rights and liberties, behold both an active and a passive dimension. Let us analyze this by remembering the Hoffel's diagram. According to Robert Alexey, every fundamental right must satisfy a logical structure that is conformed by a right, which is correlative to a duty of the state or a duty erga omnes. The right is opposite to a no right. The no right is correlative to the privilege, which is opposite to the duty. This no right is the passive expression of a liberty or a human right. For example, a person has the freedom of speech, which implies the liberty to express herself in a legal way, or the liberty to remain silent, the passive dimension of the freedom of speech. A worker has the right to become part of a workers' union. That is the active expression of such constitutional right. And as well, the worker has the right not to become part of a labor union, the passive dimension of this labor right. Now, regarding the family's conformation, we have the following. The fundamental right to conform a family through marriage. The duty of the state to warrant the exercise of the rights among their members and the acknowledge of the conformation of the family. The privilege to establish a marital property system. The right to not get married, that is the de facto union of cohabitation. The de facto union of cohabitation is then the fundamental right to live as a couple without getting married, but under the protection of the family right. This means that the consequences of the de facto union cannot be entirely different than those of the marriage. Maybe this is why Nietzsche said that marriage has ended up corrupting concubinage. Now, this fundamental right to not get married has other two dimensions, the personal and patrimonial dimensions. The personal dimension consists in the affectio maritalis, the constant will for being a couple and to behave as a married one. This cohabitation conforms the concubinage or the de facto union and has to be permanent and evident under the understanding that when one of the parties no longer wants to remain as a couple, the de facto union will cease to exist. The Mexican jurisprudence first basis for recognizing this kind of family conformation is the non-discrimination principle. By arguing that although there may be distinctions in the rights and obligations between the different civil states, it will correspond to each specific case to determine whether or not the distinctions made are discriminatory. The other basis is the right to the family's conformation contained in the Constitution, international treaties, as well as laws and jurisprudential interpretations, aimed to protect the stability of the family and regulate the conduct of its members among themselves, and also to delimit conjugal, de facto partners, and kinship relationships. In the Mexico legal system, the related personal dimension demands 2 years of cohabitation in order to generate rightful consequences. In case of having children, the time frame will not be considered. This in regard of the concubinage through the Mexican Republic. there are some federal states like Mexico City where there is a possibility to inscribe the de facto union before the civil registry. In such case, the registration of the de facto union will generate the concubinage without the time frame of 2 years for its legal recognition. Now, the patrimonial dimension involves the solidarity that comes with marital life for sharing as a couple the burdens of life. Then the de facto partner who needs alimony would be entitled to ask for it. In addition, the de facto partners generate inheritance rights between themselves. The de facto union of cohabitation also generates the acknowledgement of the couple's rights before third parties, specifically before the public institutions and their related benefits, such as social security. Although the consequences of the de facto union are not entirely different from those of marriage, these are not equal family institutions. The de facto partner would not be entitled to ask for compensation of the assets acquired by the other party during the concubinage. The Mexican Supreme Court of Justice established that the right of giving up to 50% of the assets acquired by one of the parties of the marriage to the partner who has worked for the household and in the breeding of children is not a right entitled to the de facto union. The Supreme Court points out that as there is no patrimonial regime within the legal feature of the de facto union of cohabitation, when the liquidation of the assets incorporated or acquired in such relation is arranged, it is not governed by any of the patrimonial regimes of marriage, but by the civil rules. Now, before we finish, let's get back to the struggle for the conquest of liberties. Can two people who live together as couple renounce to the de facto union consequences? Is it possible to liberate couples from the solidarity involved in the cohabitation when they don't intend to live as a married couple? The pandemic has changed not only the point of view of young people regarding to have children. The youth no longer see reproduction as a goal. But it has also provoked many young people to question about the risk of being sued in an alimony action when they have truly lived as roommates, but without the affectio maritalis. Another question that arises is, does the state have the legitimacy to limit the number of partners to legally conform a family? In other words, should the polyamorous remain forbidden as it is now in Mexico and many other countries? These two questions remain unsolved by the Mexican law for now. Anyhow, it is for sure that we will be hearing about this in a not so distant future. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Gustavo, very much for the presentation. Very interesting. Congrats. I would like to see if we have some questions. I don't see any questions in the chat. I just saw a comment from Sarah Cooper that the UK Parliament is currently considering the rights of cohabitants. So this kind of evolution, as mentioned by all of you, I think Gustavo especially mentioned, and Delia, society is always evolving, and the laws don't come at the same time as our customs. I'm very surprised every day when we think we see everything, that when we have a client knocking at the door and we see something completely different we never saw before, and this is something that really makes me surprised every day. I would like to make some questions, but I believe what you have answered already fulfilled my question, so I don't have. Will all panelists would like to ask each other a question or to make any comments? In general, we have 2 minutes for this, if you'd like to do so. And after this, I would like to invite Carolina, Daniela, and Patricia to make the final remarks and to close this event. Would you like to make any questions, and can we go ahead with it? Rodrigo, Mauricio, Dilian, Gustavo, it's okay for you?
Well, is in any of your jurisdictions the polyamorous?
Bom, eu gostaria de saber.
Oh, I think Rodrigo has a good question.
Sim,
answer
em sua
this.
Jurisdição, o poliamor é autorizado. Não, aqui na República Dominicana, por enquanto, nada. Nós ainda estamos à espera do Congresso para legalizar essas uniões de facto. E eu não sei quando vamos começar...
Okay. Mauricio, would you like to speak?
Yeah. No, in El Salvador, as the same of Republican Dominican, are not permitted.
Okay.
No. But you never know. I mean, it can happen.
And Rodrigo, what about
I'm sure
Brazil? Sure. Yeah.
Sim. Como eu não ouvi.
I think it's, we have a problem with the translators because the channels are.
Cássio, eu não ouvi.
Rodrigo, em Brasil, no Brasil, como é o governo admite o poliamor?
Admite o poliamor? I did the contracts, union contracts of polyaffective, private contracts of a man who told me the following story. He said that I would like to have a contract because I was married to a woman. Afterwards, I separate from her and I start living with another. And 3 years afterwards, she returns to me and say, now that I can see that I love you, that I want to live with you again. And she said, no, I don't want to because I'm living with another person. She said, there's no problem. Let's live all together. And 3 of them, they live together. The National Council of Justice recommended to the notary offices in 2018 not do any kind of deeds of polyaffective deeds because there were so many taking places. But a part of the polyaffective, we have the simultaneous unions, what we call today's concubinage. Today in Brazil, we have this question, what to do with these hundreds of people that live invisible in the social and in legal invisibility and marginalized in terms of law. So this is the polemic in Brazil. The Supreme Court, judges for 2 instances saying that that is not possible to recognize the rights, but there is a tendency, and in many courts, they recognize that they have the right. So we are in a moment right now where things are bubbling up, and there is an evolution in the thought in Brazil. So of polyaffective unions and simultaneous of simultaneous families, that is what the law in Brazil called concubinage.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much, Rodrigo. We are now a little bit ahead of time.